Well, Shabbat Shalom. Chag Sameach. This week, hopefully you know, we celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah, the festival of dedication. Now, I'm guessing that everyone here knows at least something about the history and the story of Hanukkah. You know, either you've read about it or been at Shema or another congregation or seen a Rugrats Hanukkah special or two in your time, if you're around my age. But the story, if I were to summarize it in two sentences, is basically how a remnant of our people, led by Judah Maccabee, overthrew the wicked king Antiochus, who defiled the Lord's temple. How the temple was then rededicated to the Lord with the oil for the Lord's menorah, lasting 8 days. Now, this miracle about oil, though, most likely never happened. It's not found in the historical accounts of 1st and 2nd Maccabees. It comes from a later Talmudic story. And so this was likely a rabbinic addition, in my opinion and the opinion of some scholars, to draw attention away from our people's sinfulness in the lead up to the Maccabean revolt. So this morning, I will not be talking about Hanukkah directly. Instead, we'll be examining two quote-unquote prequel stories. You know, I kind of think of like Star Wars, right? The first Star Wars movie is Episode 4. You sort of start in the middle of the story. And that's sort of the story of Hanukkah as we tell it. But there's actually some prequel stories before that help explain why this whole mess happened to begin with. And like Star Wars, we tend to focus on those later stories a little bit more than the first ones. So I'm going to be talking about that this morning. So these stories, two of them, occur before the Maccabean revolt and are also recorded for us in 2nd Maccabees. Now, I need to say that 2nd Maccabees is not divinely inspired. You can tell the Catholics that I told you that. It's not divinely inspired. It shouldn't be in our Bibles, but it is considered a historically accurate book. And so it's useful to understand the true story of Hanukkah and what was going on with our people during this time. So the first story will show how the Lord responds to our dedication to him. And the second is a story you may have never heard that helps explain just why Antiochus was so easily able to march through Israel and desecrate the Lord's temple. And so in these stories, we'll see the danger of living for a sinful society versus living dedicated lives to the Lord. So we begin in 2 Maccabees 3, which records the history of the high priest Onias III in Jerusalem in the years before Antiochus. Now, during this time, Seleucus IV, Antiochus's predecessor, was ruling over Israel. Maccabees records that a worker in the temple named Simon had embraced Greek customs and had also become very corrupt. He went to King Seleucus's governor, telling him that there was more gold that could be counted in the Lord's temple. And he just happened to think that maybe the king should have control over it. So after hearing all this, it goes back to King Seleucus. A Greek minister named Heliodorus was sent to the temple to take possession of all the gold and silver found within. Now, this minister confronted High Priest Onias, who informed him that Simon had been lying. There was some gold and silver, but it was set aside to provide for widows and orphans. All the other gold and silver that was stored belonged to individuals who trusted the temple like a bank because of how safe it was, as we'll see here shortly. You don't want to try to rob the Lord's temple. But Heliodorus was a greedy man, and he still wanted all that treasure. So he came back several days later with many men to count and take the money from the temple. They began to gather all the gold and silver, and it seemed that the temple was about to be robbed completely. Everyone seemed powerless to stop them. These are Greek soldiers. They're the ruling party. You can't just go up and start trouble with them. However, at that time, most of our people were still dedicated to the Lord. And Maccabees records that from the priests down to the children, everyone mourned what was happening and prayed to the Lord to stop it. Wherever they went, they lifted their hands to God in prayer. They put on clothes of mourning and sackcloth. So imagine that. Imagine the entire city of Jerusalem stopping everything to turn out to pray to the Lord, to cry out to Adonai. That's what happened here. The Lord heard their prayers, and he chose to act. While the Greek soldiers were counting the money in the temple, they saw a vision of human beings that were most likely angels, appearing like human men in armor, and they were immediately struck with fear. The king's minister also saw this vision, and he was attacked by the angels, knocking him unconscious. The soldiers fled the temple with the minister on a stretcher, unconscious, made acutely aware how helpless they were in the face of Adonai, because all their supposed strength was nothing to the Lord of Lords. Now, Heliodorus was unable to speak or recover. He was knocked out completely. And after being carried out on the stretcher, a couple days pass, and he's still not getting any better. It was only after the righteous high priest Onias offered a sacrifice in prayer to the Lord that he was finally healed. The angels appeared to him again after he was healed and told Heliodorus to go back to his country and tell everyone about the Lord's power. So he returned back to the king empty-handed. You know, when angels tell you to do something, you pretty much listen. And he told the king everything that had occurred. Now, King Seleucus was a ruler of an empire. He was not normally denied what he wanted, especially when it came to money. So he decided to ask Heliodorus who would be the best man to send to Jerusalem to try this again. We find Heliodorus' reply in 2 Maccabees 3, 38 through 39. Here's what he had to say in response. If you have an enemy or know of someone plotting against your government, send him. He will come back badly beaten if he comes back at all. For some strange power from God is at work there. The God of heaven watches over the temple. He strikes down and destroys anyone who comes to harm it. Seleucus, listening to his minister, realized, maybe we shouldn't send anybody back. And he decides to stop trying to take the temple's funds. So in this chapter, we see how the Lord defended our people in his temple. We were dedicated to the Lord, and in his love and faithfulness, he responded to our prayers. But sadly, our dedication to the Lord would begin to fade in the following years, which are recorded in the next chapter of 2 Maccabees, 2 Maccabees 4. And there we read, after the death of King Seleucus, Antiochus becomes king. Onias' brother Jason then bribes Antiochus to become the high priest, pays money to become the high priest of Israel. And this is actually a pattern that we'll see continue year after year. He's not the first person or the last to buy the priesthood. Now, Jason not only gives Antiochus money for the priesthood, but he also promises to build a large Greek stadium in Israel. And so this was to encourage Jews to become Greek citizens and embrace Greek pagan customs in a process we call Hellenization. It was to facilitate sort of Jewish conversion to Greek pagan thought. Now, after Jason was made high priest, our people were quickly required to adopt a Greek way of life. It wasn't like when Antiochus moves in, it was just highly encouraged. Jason built the stadium he promised near the temple, and he had the young men compete athletically, which was part of Greek customs. We know that as the Olympics now, but there were all sorts of Greek games. But this is also part of pagan rituals. You competed to please the gods. It was a place to learn about Greek culture and custom as a way to get indoctrinated. And so very quickly, our people in the cities began to truly abandon the Lord. They loved the games. Listen to this passage from 2 Maccabees 4, 13 through 17. You know, I usually summarize this sort of stuff, but I just want you to hear it straight from the writer's mouth. Because of the unrivaled wickedness of Jason, that ungodly and illegitimate high priest, the craze for the Greek way of life and for foreign customs reached such a point that even the priests lost all interest in their sacred duties. They lost interest in the temple services, and they neglected the sacrifices. Just as soon as the signal was given, they would rush off to take part in the games that were forbidden by our law. They did not care about anything their ancestors had valued. They prized only Greek honors. And this turned out to be the source of all their troubles. For the very people whose ways they admired and whose customs they tried to imitate became their enemies and oppressed them. It is a serious thing to disregard God's laws, as you will see from the following events. Now, what is referred to here as, quote unquote, the following events is a record of Onias's murder and the priesthood being brought again. And all these events occur before Antiochus truly conquers Jerusalem, before he desecrates the temple, and before the Maccabees, through the Lord's power, were successfully able to defeat him. You know, when I was a child in Hebrew school, I often wondered why the Lord allowed the temple to be desecrated like it was. Why didn't the Lord supernaturally intervene like he had so many other times in our history recorded in Scripture? I was not told the part of the story I shared with you this morning. That ain't part of the Rugrats Hanukkah special. When you know the full story, the answer is clear. Our leadership and our people had rushed to embrace the surrounding wicked culture and had chosen to abandon the Lord. While we remained dedicated to Adonai, the temple and our people experienced his protection. When we chose to dedicate ourselves to our own pleasure, we experienced the punishment of our sinfulness. When we consider our people's punishment here, it is easy for us to wrongly assume we would have done better. We would never have embraced Greek customs. We never would have gone to the games. We would have honored God and stood with Mattathias, Maccabee, and said to Antiochus, heck no. The truth is, we are not so different from that generation. Because like them, we are easily seduced by greed and pleasure. Two words I think adequately describe the society we live in. There are important lessons for us to learn from the stories before Hanukkah for us today as well. And so first we see that corrupt leaders lead to corrupt people. When Onias was our righteous high priest, our people experienced blessing. But all it took was one corrupt high priest to get that ball rolling, to begin moving our people more towards sinful practices. Corrupt political, business, or spiritual leaders will always guide us towards a crisis. We need only look at the history of corrupt communist countries, businesses like Enron, or churches or messianic congregations that have fallen apart. Fortunately, at least for now, we do not live in a country ruled by kings and queens. We have no dictators appointed for life yet. So it is the duty of every believer to vote for godly, principled people. Notice I didn't name a political party here. I named political principles. Very important. But we need to vote well for leaders who believe in the Lord, who will guide us well on a local as well as national level. And we need to encourage righteous leaders in all areas of our lives. We also must stand for the Lord, even when the majority, like during the time of Hanukkah, has chosen to abandon him. You know, being under good political and business leaders are important. It can make our lives much easier. But there is probably nothing more essential than being under a good spiritual leader. We must be under pastors and rabbis dedicated to the Lord and not our surrounding society. You know, I can't control who's going to win the presidency, but I can control what spiritual leader I'm under. This is something we cannot compromise on. You know, it's a sad truth, and as somebody in ministry who deals with leaders and reads about these things, It's easy for other for leaders to become seduced by the same sinfulness of greed and desire that consumes so many of the Lord's priesthood. Today, many leaders are obsessed with money, with power, and even the size of their congregations. And we see repeatedly the spiritual destruction corrupt leaders bring when it all comes tumbling down. All too often, we tend to judge a ministry as worthy based on how large and impressive it is as well. If it's big and impressive, they must be doing good. That's a horrible way to evaluate anything. Dedication to the Lord and Messiah's community should be what draws us to a congregation. The community that you're a part of, the leadership that you're under, should care about God and for God's people. If they don't, that's not a healthy place to be under. Flashy shallowness and being attractive like the society that surrounds us should not be what draws us in. It should not be the model for how we do ministry and the communities that we're a part of. Sadly, many congregations are like this. They say, what's working in wider society? Let's emulate this. Let's be cool and hip in a way to bring as many people in as possible. Compromise on the gospel. Give a different gospel or a watered-down gospel. You know, we're not going to emphasize Yeshua. We're going to emphasize other things that are more attractive to our audience. That's not the way you build a community in the Lord's house. Now, a second lesson from these stories is that we must not become seduced as well by the culture that surrounds us today. This isn't just a leadership issue. It's an us issue. Now, don't misunderstand me here. I'm not saying we need to live lives, ascetic lives in little monasteries, that we cannot interact with society at all or even enjoy a nice TV show. I got a couple of friends of mine who've been recommending Netflix's Lost in Space to me if you like sci-fi. You can enjoy a nice Netflix program. You can interact with society. Ice cream is okay on occasion. But we cannot allow the world's values, the way we live our lives, the way they live their lives, to become the way we live our lives. You know, we live in a society that preaches mindless pleasure. You know, people say you're in 1984. We're not in 1984. We're in Brave New World, okay? This is Brave New World. This is in 1984. If you don't know the book, you should read it. It's good. But we live in a society that preaches mindless pleasure to distract ourselves from the real problems around us. A society that mocks the Lord and mocks the idea that there is a real standard for how we should live our lives. It's not just up to me or you to figure it out. Too often, we try to imitate the world around us to be accepted and have fun. But I'm reminded of the Apostle John's warning in 1 John 2:15 through 17. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. That's a warning. For all that is in the world, and notice the list here, the desires of the flesh, the desire of the eyes, and pride in possessions is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires. But whoever does the will of God abides forever. This is the lesson our people learned the hard way. We learned again what happens when we chase after the world and its approval. If we today refuse to become dedicated to the Lord, we will be destroyed with this world as well. Gaining physical pleasure and physical things are not the point of life. They are spiritual traps that will corrupt our walk with the Lord and leave us open to punishment and suffering. So we must cultivate the spiritual discipline of saying no. Two-year-olds are pretty good at this. Saying no to those we want, to those who want us to abandon the Lord. Saying no to the approval and honor of this world. Saying no to dedicating our lives to meaningless and pointless things instead of our rock and our refuge. As we celebrate this season of Hanukkah, it is my prayer that we learn the lessons from its history and not repeat them again. That we would say yes to the light of the Lord and no to the darkness that surrounds us. May each of us become even more dedicated to the Lord through the sacrifice and example of Messiah Yeshua. May we all experience every promise of the Lord through saying yes to him. Thank you.